Hello? Hello? Hello, someone on the line?
Yes, hi, this
Hi and welcome. This is Dave Krueger. Welcome to the CTA teleseminar series on massive success strategies, also known by the more sober title of Influence Psychology, Persuasion Science, and Neuromarketing. I just received the list of everyone who's participating recently, so the email has gone out late, but I can tell you what I said in the email if anybody would like to respond now. First of all, let me welcome all the people who we have not crossed paths before, a number of my buddies from the CTA faculty, some people from the work we've done with the licensed specialty certification, New Life Story Wellness Training and New Money Story Mentors. So welcome. I think we're going to have a really, really interesting time, and I think some stretches of the way you're thinking and applying things with your practice and marketing. The two questions that I ask, if we were to sit down face-to-face right now, what's the most important question you would like to ask about what we're going to talk about, what you'd like to know? And secondly, if you were to walk away from this seminar series 4 weeks from now saying this is one of the best series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? Would anyone like to respond? Thank you for those of you who have responded, but the email only went out very recently. So I'm interested in any responses that you have right now, just off the top of your head. What would you like to most ask, and what would you like to walk away with? Because it makes a difference to me in shaping some of the discussion, some of the examples of what we're going to cover. Anyone? But one at a time.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Hi, hello. My name's Annette Moreau. I'm calling in from Tennessee.
Welcome.
And I
you were the first registrant, so you're on this.
Yes, yes. No, I know that this, I admit, is an area not in my strengths thus far, so I know it's something that I need to develop and it will make a big difference for my practice, most definitely. So a takeaway that I know, and especially in looking at the downloaded piece of material, would be for me to offline create kind of my short presentation blurb, both refined elevator speech or, for example, I'm going to be talking at a meetup group that I've been invited to join here locally. And that I can be as persuasive, but as heartfelt and as true to the connection of what my niche is, what support I'm offering through my coaching practice, but kind of have that as my gift so that I can go in and use that effectively. Because I think so far I felt that each time I, talk to someone or I talk to a group of people, I'm still kind of hoping it all comes out well. I haven't had a good, strong plan, whether you would call it just a bubble talk that's ready to go.
Okay, well, that's a great question, because we all share that hope, but I want to shape a discussion so that you'll have the best of what we know about influence, psychology, persuasion, science, and neuromarketing to determine the best possible outcome for you. And we're going to go through a little bit of that because I'm going to refer to the landing page that you went to at Coach Training Alliance and tell you one outcome of that. When I first this is the third time I've offered this. The first time I offered it, I had kind of the same approach you did. I thought, well, you know, this is what I really want to know and learn. This is what I spent a considerable amount of time and a number of books and articles and all kinds of things putting together. And I offered it in the way that I usually do other material that I offer, and there was a nice response. What I realized when I offered it the second time is that I didn't really honestly listen to myself and the principles that I was imparting in what I did. When I shifted the way that I presented it and incorporated the principles that I talked about, I learned well but not quickly, the enrollment was 8 times what it was the first time. And the material didn't change, but the presentation did. So I'm going to refer to that landing page that you have access to at Coach Training Alliance, because that's designed in a specific way that I want to refer back to as an illustration of how to do that. And we're going to talk about some aspects of how to do that in a compelling way, and I think ways that make some difference and can make a difference in your practice for your services or your products. So thanks, Annette. That's a big point. Who else? What other things would you like to be sure we cover or to walk away with? Anyone? Well, my dilemma always is I would love to do a seminar with discussion back and forth, but there's so much that I want to convey to you that I move to doing a presentation. I know that doesn't allow as much discussion, but I'm going to put us on lecture mode so that you don't have to worry about background noise, but I'm going to save some time at the end for us to come back and discuss. So jot down anything you'd like to discuss or questions you have, and I encourage you to send me any comments or email, or especially answer those questions if you haven't already, but to ask any questions or clarifications that we don't get to in our discussion in an email, and I'll begin there next time. So hold on. So here's the premise and the overview of what we're going to do for these 4 weeks. Although practicing professionals in healthcare, law, finance, accounting, business, and coaching are well-educated and trained, they may have trouble acknowledging that they're really in sales and service, able to help others achieve their goals, especially us and coaches. As coaches, they may still be learning how to translate that into doing the same for their own practices and businesses. And remember, this is for all professionals, because as professionals, we're not trained to do sales and service. That's just not part of who we are by identity. So this is to expand that, to challenge that, to perturbate that system. So here's what we're going to do together. Innovative work in the mind and brain sciences help us understand more about the topics of our 4 seminars on the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mastery of mindsets, and neuromarketing to apply each to develop your success. I want to show you how each of these can add immensely to your business success, specifically how these brain-based strategies of the persuasion sciences can generate measurable improvement of engagement and sales for your professional services and products. So, to begin, we're going to talk in this seminar on the psychology of influence. I want to give you 2 quizzes. Here's the first quiz, and this is multiple choice. It's in the outline, and the outline is on the page that you were directed to for online playback. Hope you've downloaded the outline. Here's the first quiz. The Wharton School of Business surveyed several thousand professionals to determine what was the primary factor about whether someone engaged or declined services from that professional, and it was the same reason both ways. The number one reason they declined, the number one reason that they accepted services. What do you think it was? Years of experience, reputation, amount of the fee, degrees and certifications, stating the recommendations in fee clearly and confidently, state of the economy. Quiz number two. Carnegie Mellon did a big study to determine the major factor for professionals earning the trust of others. What do you think it was, the primary reason? Established, proven expert, confidence of the professional, demonstrated current expertise, reputation. The answer to both of these quizzes is the same, stating the recommendations and fee clearly and confidently trumped all the other variables. Simple, confident explanations trump expertise. Mirror neurons and energy fields resonate with another's emotional state and influence behavior. Confidence is more correlated with success than competence or expertise. We're going to return to this later, and I'll refer you to one view of this, a blog, and I have in my blog archives, is confidence is a state of mind. And if you want to look at that at some point, it's at mentorpath.com in the blog archive. But we're going to return to that. So let's talk about influence. Influence simply is to move people to a desired outcome while helping them feel genuinely good about themselves and you. There are four primary tools of influence that we need to specifically understand. This is a compilation of a large number of studies and neuroscience studies. Four primary tools of influence. One is the influential story pattern. Why, for example, is Apple so innovative? Year after year, they're more innovative than their competition, yet they began just as a computer products company. They have the same access to the same talent, the same agencies, same consultants, same media. So why do they have such phenomenal success while the number of others in the same industry sort of flat or have failed? Why is it that Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement? He wasn't the only guy who suffered in a pre-civil rights America, wasn't the only great orator of the day. Why him? There's something else at play here. As it turns out, there's a pattern. All the great and inspiring leaders and organizations in the world, whether it's Apple or Martin Luther King, they think, act, and communicate in the same way. And it happens to be the complete opposite to everyone else. Listen for the pattern. A marketing message from computer companies like Dell, Hewlett-Packard, and others is, "We make great computers. They're beautifully designed, state-of-the-art, user-friendly. Want to buy one?" That's how most of us communicate, how most of marketing is done. That's how we engage with others to engage a coaching client or for our services. We say what we do, how we're different and better, and then expect people to respond by buying our services or products. But here's how Apple communicates. Everything we do, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. The way we challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. We just happen to make great computers. You want to buy one? Totally different. This reverses the order of communication, not just for computers, but also for everything else that they produce. Here's the other example. In the summer of 1963, 250,000 people showed up on the mall in D.C. to hear Dr. King speak. They didn't send out invitations. There wasn't any website to check the date. How did they do that? Dr. King didn't go around telling people what needed to change in America. He went around and told people what he believed. And people who believed what he believed took his cause and they made it their own and they told people. And some of those people created structures to get the word out to even more people. 250,000 people showed up on the right day, the right time, to hear him speak. How many of them showed up for him? Zero. They showed up for themselves. It's what they believe about America that got them to travel maybe on a bus for many hours to stand in the sun in Washington in the middle of August. It's what they believe. And it wasn't about black versus white. 25% of the audience was white. And he gave the I have a dream speech, not the I have a plan speech. No matter how talented, skilled, experienced, hardworking, and unique you are, unless you are able to influence the ways others think and act, your success may be limited. This does not equate at all with manipulation, or I wouldn't even be talking about this, but with consistently generating personal and professional satisfaction while making the lives of others considerably better. I've seen some of the most talented and well-trained people in the world with stellar academic backgrounds and exceptional training accomplish average or even not-so-average results, first in psychiatry and psychoanalysis, then in mentor coaching, because they didn't master people and influence skills that truly resonate with someone to commit, to buy in. And I've seen people who master these skills soar personally and professionally. One key principle is from Dale Carnegie. He said, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reason. This means that for the ultimate influence, we have to first ask the question, what's in it for them? The greatest story commandment, make me care, emotionally, intellectually, aesthetically. Make your audience care. To make them care, you need to know what they already most care about. Home, status, family, adventure, security, mastery, their fundamental needs and ideals. The most powerful stories began by placing a core ideal or concern at the center of the challenge that the audience may have never before imagined, but now can't ignore, the value proposition. Dr. Robert Maloney, a professor of ophthalmology at UCLA, was the first surgeon in North America to perform LASIK surgery. He had to help his patients overcome their fear of this unknown procedure, which involves cutting a flap in the surface of their eyeball, the cornea. Nobody had ever done this before, willingly. He had to give full disclosure, including negative possibilities that could easily discourage people from getting the procedures they needed, all without testimonials of success stories from former patients, no reputation because nobody had done this before, he hadn't done it before. He listened closely to his patients and discovered the value proposition they actually cared about most. It was trust. They didn't want guarantees. They wanted reassurance. They needed reassurance. So Maloney began telling his patients, no matter what happens, I'm going to be here to take care of you. Then he'd tell them the story of what he expected would happen with their surgery. He would cover the requisite negative information about problems they may have to struggle with, but he would conclude his story with a resolution that satisfied their emotional interest. I'm never giving up on you. Even if there's a problem, we're in this together, walking side by side. His emphasis, his framework, was the story of relationship and loyalty. His call to action was for his patients to trust him enough to make their leap into uncertainty. By now, Maloney has personally performed more than 50,000 vision correction surgeries. This, I believe, is what my mentor coaching clients need to hear from me, that I will believe in you until both of us do, and I will walk side by side with you and through your success no matter what. What's this influential pattern? What's the influential pattern? Let's deconstruct it. It may be among the world's simplest ideas condensed into three words. What, how, why? These three words explain why some organizations and some leaders are able to inspire and others aren't. Every single person and organization on the planet knows what they do. Some know how they do it, whether you call it a differentiating value proposition or a proprietary process. But few people or organizations know why they do what they do. And by why, I'm not talking about making a profit, but what is your purpose? What's your cause? What's your belief? Why does your organization exist? Why do you get out of bed in the morning? And why should anybody care? The inspired leaders and the inspired organizations, regardless of size, industry, focus, they all think, act, and communicate from the inside out. What it proves to us is this. People don't buy what you do. People buy why you do it. The goal is not to do business with everybody who needs what you have. The goal is to do business with people who believe what you believe. People don't buy what you do. People buy why you do it. This why is your story and your mission. It should be bold, captivating, inspirational. One of my New Life Story wellness coaches in training asked me a simple question. Dave, tell us your story and your mission statement. It was kind of an unexpected challenge, and I had to kind of construct it on the fly, even though I thought about it. But here it is. Here's my story. To live, love, contribute, and play with absolute passion. Here's my mission. To inspire and guide people to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. Now, I better be doing that as we speak, or you should ask for your money back. And I'm doing that to kind of prime the pump, to give you an idea of what I mean by this, because this is something I'm very familiar with. The foundation of influence is based in brain science, so I want to show you how to do that. Now, imagine the brain as three circles within each other. And I'd suggest draw three circles inside each other on a piece of paper, like a bullseye. This is not as such in your outline. The outer circle is our newest brain, our neocortex. It's responsible for all rational, intellectual, analytic thought and language. This corresponds with the what level. This is the explanation, all the logical reasons, the way things make sense. The middle circle is the midbrain, which processes perception and attaches meaning. This corresponds with the how. The inner circle is the limbic brain, responsible for our feelings and initiating decision-making. This corresponds with the why. Our limbic brains are responsible for all of our feelings, like trust and loyalty, and responsible for driving all of our human behavior, all decision-making. And it has no capacity for language. In other words, when we communicate from the outside in, people can understand a lot of complicated information like features and benefits and facts and figures, but that doesn't drive behavior. When we communicate from the inside out, we're talking directly to the part of the brain that determines behavior, that determines purchase decisions. We then allow people to rationalize it with the outer logical brain. This is where our gut decisions come from. We make decisions first at the level that we're speaking of now, before we're even consciously aware of it. Marketing and brand loyalty are about emotion, not reason. Phil Knight, founder and CEO of Nike, said, "You can't explain a whole lot in 60 seconds, but when you show a picture of Michael Jordan, you don't need to. It's that simple." Sometimes you can give somebody all the facts and the figures, and they say, "Well, I know what all the information and details say, but it just doesn't feel right." Now, that verb, feel right, comes from the part of the brain that controls decision-making, not language, not logic, not reason. So the best somebody can muster is, "Well, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right." Or sometimes you say you're leading with your heart or you have a gut feeling. Your heart and soul and gut are not decision-making body parts, but metaphors for the limbic system. It's all happening in our limbic system. Since people respond to why you do what you do, the need to know why you do what you do is absolutely crucial. If you don't know your why, how will you get people to buy something from you, or more importantly, to be loyal and want to be a part of what it is that you do? Our most immediate intuitive response to someone is based on two things, strength and want. Strength, the perception of someone's capacity to make things happen with abilities and will, and that commands our respect. Warmth is the sense that a person connects with our feelings, our interest and view of the world. When people project warmth, we like and support them. Strength and warmth are complementary. They are not mutually exclusive opposites. When people respond to another person, the most important and immediate criteria is warmth. Janine Willis and Alex Todorov of Princeton have found that people make warmth judgments within a tenth of a second of seeing a new person's face. This makes intuitive sense. When we meet someone new, we want to figure out their intentions, part of our survival. Amy Cuddy at Harvard did seminal work in this area to find that emotional responses to people who project both strength and warmth are the most effective and influential. So the first rule in telling stories is to give the listener an emotional experience. The heart is always the first target, meaning the portal of entry is the amygdala. Metaphor and analogy, most effective ways of doing this, are building blocks to evoke images and activate memory with all its rich synergy and emotional association. This brings the listener into the story as co-creator. A story, if broken down into the simplest form, is the connection of cause and effect. That's exactly how we think. We think in narratives all day long. No matter if it's about buying groceries, about work, our partner, our home, we make up short stories in our heads for every action and conversation. And whenever we hear a story, we want to relate it to one of our existing experiences. That's why metaphors work so well with us. They're great bridges. We're always busy searching for a similar experience in our brain. Our brain's major capacity is matchmaking of patterns. And in doing so, it activates our insula, which helps us relate that experience to pain or joy, desire or disgust, or most simply, pain or pleasure. People buy what they identify with. When a product or service resonates with someone's identity, this activates a specific portion of their brains that synthesize a sense of self. That's a very specific portion of the brain. And then they buy. This is the biggest determinant of a purchase decision. There's some fantastic research now for some neuroeconomics labs, one of which I correspond with. State-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychology demonstrate how we create ourselves, our sense of self, through narrative. A very specific region of the left forebrain specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thoughts, the brain origin of our sense of self. This interpreter function is the glue that keeps our stories unified to create a cohesive sense of self. These language areas of this left hemisphere draw on memory from the midbrain hippocampal circuits and the planning regions in the orbital frontal cortex. Not important that you remember that, but the goal, then, is not just to sell people who need what you have. The goal is to sell people who believe what you believe. This is the unstated secret of Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, Abraham Lincoln. This resonates with their core identity, their why. It's not what someone will say in response to your communication, but what they say to themselves as a result of your communication with them. Cognitive studies have shown that the message itself is not directly responsible for change. The direct result of change is due to another factor, self-talk. That is, what a person says to himself or herself after receiving a message. We tend to recall, rather than the comments made to us, the comments that we make to ourselves. Think about it. Think about what you remember about a situation or a circumstance or a pitch. This is one reason we want to avoid negative messages. The second primary, and there are some fantastic studies now from some neuroeconomics labs that show that out of a whole host of factors, when there is some particular product or some particular offering that resonates with someone's identity, this particular part of the brain lights up, and that determines hands down that they're more likely to purchase or pursue that product or that service. The second primary tool of influence, defining your story. In a dialectic between emotion and rationality, emotion wins hands down. This is basic human nature. Our emotional side is like an elephant, and our rational side is like the rider on the top. The rider holds the reins, looks like he's in charge, But if the elephant and rider disagree about which direction to go, guess who picks? 180 pounds versus 12,000 pounds? Slam dunk. The brain needs a story. We have a biology for reciprocation and an innate desire to bond, to connect. Story is an essential element of explanation to bring together and balance the emotional and rational. Listening to and telling stories ignites the portions of the brain that process meaning. We are information-seeking creatures. When data is tucked inside a story, our brains absorb the data connected to the feelings, and we experience while listening to that story. And we remember the feelings we experience while we're listening to that story. When information is recalled, it boots up the feeling of the telling. Stories make facts and information resonant, memorable, and actionable. Story deserves front row center in professional communication to make ideas easier to understand. And because that's the way our brains work. We make sense of things. We remember things by stories. Substance and meaning become the two most powerful aspects of an explanation. Facts give stories substance. Stories give facts meaning. If your business is not based on a story, you won't have a business. All good stories give a promise in the beginning, a promise that it will be worth their time. You invite the listener to join the campfire of the story. Once upon a time, stories like life and life stories have guidelines, not rules. Storytelling, a strong theme always runs through a well-told story. All well-drawn characters have a spine, an inner, dominant, unconscious quest that they're striving for, an itch they can't scratch. Michael Corleone in The Godfather wanted to please his father. Other spines, not all of which lead somebody to make good choices, to find the beauty, to prevent harm, to do what's best for my child. To engage a client, write a vivid story about your service, product, or brand. Include aspects that would activate different parts of their brains. Action, motion, dialogue, sensory experiences. Some guidelines for simplification to make ideas easier to understand. Don't assume what people already know. Don't assume that they know anything. Begin with what you want to convey. Connect basic ideas to one that the listener already understands. Use the most simple, basic language possible. Enhance understanding by clarity, brevity, and simplicity. These are the four basic rules of good writing, the four basic rules of good communication. Clarity, brevity, simplicity, and humanity. The brain learns best in small chunks. Programs or training designed in chunks work best, and those that work best also include time for reflection to kind of metabolize the process and to put it in an output channel to be able to use it in some way. People only change their behavior when they recognize the benefit of doing so for themselves. So concentrate on engaging and promoting insight rather than giving facts or instructions or models. Cisco CEO John Chambers didn't communicate to employees or clients or colleagues about selling switches and routers. He told a story, a vision of an internet that changes the way we live, work, play, and learn. Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't sell coffee and lattes, but the concept of community. His vision was a third place between home and work. Listen to how Steve Jobs convinced former Pepsi president at the time, John Sculley, to become CEO at Apple. They were on a balcony overlooking Central Park in New York City. Jobs simply asked Sculley, "You want to sell sugared water all your life, or do you want to change the world?" Each simple, basic story had at its heart the why. Nancy Duarte studied the craft of storytelling and dramatic plot structure. This, what she found, is absolutely fascinating to me. She found, by analyzing hundreds of the most famous speeches of all time and testing all the different story structures that she could conceptualize, she discovered a story pattern at the foundation of all of the greatest speeches in the world. And it's so simple, it's almost elusive. It's a combination of what is followed by what could be for several sequences. And I want to give you an example of how to do that in a minute. She grafted the configuration and superimposed the sequence of the patterns of the talks of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream, Steve Jobs' well-known graduation speech, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, a number of hundreds of the most well-known speeches. Each had the same configuration pattern. So here is a way to create that influential story pattern. Now, this is in your outline. The context, the preface, is your story has to be in your own voice. To create a clear and compelling story about your body of work, find a thread of connection with your audience as you craft specific messages from certain situations. It has to be in your voice. It has to sound like you're saying it to somebody, like you're talking, not like you're reading it. And to be genuine and authentic, as if the person is sitting across from you at the coffee shop. So the first, what is? For the influential story pattern, first craft a beginning. Their challenge, their pain point. That's the what is. That's the what is for them, and that's all that matters. The first thing to do in preparing a presentation or a product offering or a message about a service is to know the audience and to know three things about them: their deepest needs, their deepest desires, their deepest concerns. Those will form their pain points and their challenges. From this knowledge, describe a situation as the audience knows it. What is? You are articulating what they already know and experience. This creates a bond of understanding, a common ground between you and the audience, and it readies them to hear your ideas for change. After you establish this baseline of what is, remember, simple, specific, in one sentence, introduce your vision, what could be. The gap between the two will activate the audience's brains and therefore their listening mode. Now, back to that landing page that described this offering at CTA. There were six bullets. The six bullets were the pain points, the challenges of what I know to be from the professionals I've worked with in training and mentor coaching. And think about how this each bullet will activate a specific need or desire. And then the second set of bullets will match one for one, first bullet with first bullet, for how to address that. For example, notice the first question on the landing page. Do you have significant skill, expertise, and credentials, but not enough clients? That's a what is. Notice the corresponding bullet below of what you'll learn. I will help you systematically shape the primary reason people will buy professional services or products from you. A what could be. Question number two, a what is. Do you have difficulty converting people who need your services into paying clients? Second bullet, what could be. I will share with you the mind and brain secrets of successful selling. Once you establish a gap, the rest of the presentation focuses on filling it, bridging it. Number two of the influential story pattern. And this is back to developing the influential story pattern. Develop the middle, the struggle. Continue to capture and highlight the contrast between what is and what could be. Perhaps several sequences of what is followed by what could be. Question number three from the landing page, what is? Do you lack a system to consistently bring in more clients to your professional practice? Bullets three and four, a what could be. I'll show you four primary tools of influence and the six psychological principles of successful persuasion. So as you move back and forth between what is and what could be, the audience will find what could be more and more compelling. And the third part of the influential story pattern, as we're developing the components here, make the ending powerful, the resolution. Rather than a whole bunch of to-dos, include a call to action that's inspiring so people will want to act. Emphasize how much better they and the world will be when they adopt your ideas. Avoid the reasons people fail. Focus on winning success strategies. Now, there are three building blocks of all compelling stories. And this includes novels, this includes copy, whatever comprises compelling stories. Challenge, struggle, and resolution. The fuel that propels this vehicle is emotional transportation. The best stories lead with the heart, not with the mind. Emotional transportation is the complex system of action and reaction that operates within stories to move listeners. The stories that really work transport the listener emotionally. Even in the business context, if you fail to transport your listener emotionally, you'll either lose the audience or not get a response. Now, the third primary tool of influence, your body of work. To create a cohesive story about your body of work, you need to create a content map in clear, simple, specific language. What do your followers really need? Now, brainstorm a bunch of different needs and what you, from what you know of your audience. What are the challenges? What are the pain points? What do they really need to address these? And then consider grouping them perhaps into categories, one of four major categories. Knowledge first. How do you work through each stage of creating a business? What are the most effective ways to get things done? Who should you also involve? Encouragement, validation of good choices and overcoming trepidation about leaving a comfort zone. Community, who are the positive, supportive people you need to add to your network or include in your network? And finally, promotion, how do you expand your network and exposure to create a successful business? Develop and share the content, that content, with your clients or your customers in terms of what they need. Share knowledge, provide encouragement, promote the work of your clients and potential clients. Create places online and in person where people can build community. So, thinking about it in this way, create a personal content map. Define the specific needs of the people you want to influence with your body of work. Include the steps they need to address their problem. What's the first problem they need help solving? This is what's going to engage them. Once that problem is solved, where do they go next? Create a path of steps to help them realize their goal. Secondly, create content to help them solve their problems. Tools can range from blogs, podcasts, ebooks, teleclasses, workshops, coaching, retreats. Sprinkle products and services that your people need, such as blogs and newsletters, to seed larger offerings of coaching, workshops, and retreats. And fourthly, organize your content map in a clear and compelling way to develop totally professional promotional materials. And remember, always communicate simply and clearly. Use clear, simple, specific, descriptive languages. The sciences of mind and brain show us how good communication involves these four elements: clarity, brevity, simplicity, and humanity, the four common aspects of good writing and good communication. This is how language works best in both speaking and writing. When Maurice Sendak wrote his book, Where the Wild Things Are, he worked for 10 years on a book with 338 words. Now, I've been accused of approaching that number per sentence, but for example, when he's ready for the action to begin, he says very simply and vividly, "Let the wild rumpus start." Perfectly chosen, crisp, simple, powerful words. Focus your topic clearly organized around your primary message, maybe with no more than 3 subpoints. Competitive advantage requires creating a perception of exceptional differentiation, and then accentuating it. When you're successful at accentuating your market uniqueness, the consumer will redefine the competition as less desirable. Focus on the experience you deliver. Remember, people make decisions first emotionally and then process them in a conscious, logical way. A winning business objective is to create an emotional connection with the consumer and the emotional decision to align with you, strength and warmth. So here are 3 crucial questions for you to consider. What makes you distinct, unique, and memorable? What is the premium the customer gets by doing business with you? And what is the sense of intimacy with you and the customer? Consumers are more concerned with not making a bad decision than making the best decision. Behavioral economics research shows us that loss aversion is that we register twice as much pain from losing $100 than the pleasure from gaining $100, which is a consideration of a potential consumer overcoming the fear of buying something that won't pay off, that they'll make a bad decision. Consumer intimacy is created by distinction, likability, consistent familiarity. You must deliver likability that's different from the competition. A product is part of the package of value. Now, a 4th and final primary tool of influence, the mindset and the message. A story told by Simon Sinek, author of Start With Why, observed that all the signs of panhandlers had a similar message. I'm needy, please help me. He believed that by changing the homeless person's message, he could change the result. Simon found a street beggar in New York who was willing to work with him on his experiment. In talking with the woman, he learned that she received an average of $20 to $30 during each of her 8 to 10-hour days. If she got to 30, she considered it a great day. Simon convinced her to change her sign. Instead of focusing on the situation, homeless and hungry, he helped her craft a sign that focused on the potential contributor. If you only give once a month, next time think of me. In the first 2 hours, she collected $50. When the message shifted focus from her needs to focus on the passerby, the results increased significantly. This emphasized that the focus needs to be on the person making the decision, not on the needs of the recipient, the presenter, or the seller, not on us as coaches having a product or service. When we focus in our everyday lives on ourselves, the message is generally about us, what we're doing, what we need, how things are going or not going. At times, these messages that we send out are very subtle, and they operate on the unconscious level, but people are influenced, either positively or negatively, by our messages, consistently and powerfully. We need to understand this and focus on how our messages influence others. When we send out messages that are just about us, our services, and our products, no matter how great they are and well-described they are, we're going to receive less response from others. This is the transition that I made, that I mentioned in the initial discussion that resulted in an 8-fold difference. The more we take as point of reference the recipient of the message, the more those recipients will be willing to join us and create mutual fulfillment. Think about the messages you communicate. Rather than beginning with the benefits of what you do or the facts or the features, begin with the issues of the recipient, the pain points, the needs, the challenges. What will someone pay you money for? They will pay you for what they can't do or be or accomplish themselves. So rather than telling somebody about your experience, your credentials, your training, focus on what's in it for them. No patient ever came to work with me previously as a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst. Not one patient for 25 years, because I was named one of the top doctors in America. No client has come to work with me in the last decade as a mentor coach, because I've written 19 books. They don't care, and they shouldn't. They want to know I care about them. They want to know what's in it for them, to get the sense that I confidently believe in both of us to do that, that I am loyally and passionately 100% dedicated to their success. Theodore Roosevelt said it even more succinctly. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's been said that there are two things that people don't want to know how they're made: laws and sausage. This is the third: all of your qualifications and degrees and training and experience. Your clients want to know what's in it for me. Remember that our brains release dopamine, the pleasure chemical, when we anticipate a positive experience, such as just before spending money. This emphasizes the role of hope and anticipation in looking forward to a positive result. Now, here's a brief overview of influence factors. One is confidence. We know from numerous neuroscience studies that emotions and states of mind are contagious by an energy field transfer from amygdala to amygdala, person to person. Einstein referred to this as the unified field theory. He emphasized that we are each a bundle of energy and interact with another person who's also a bundle of energy, and those energy fields intersect and interact, the same with each person and the collective field of a group of other people, which is one of the reasons, in one controlled experiment, teams in the NBA play 82 games a year. They lose more than one-third more often in away games as they do home games. Negative energy field away, positive energy field at home. Confident is a state of mind. It's contagious. We're going to discuss more about that in Seminar 3 on Mindset Mastery. Confidence is more important than past accuracy or demonstrated expertise in earning the trust of others, because we make a decision first on an emotional basis and then boot it up to our forebrain to make it make logical and conscious sense and light on something familiar. People naturally associate confidence with expertise. As I mentioned, mirror neurons play a role in our affinity for confident people. The induction of a shared experience, the mutual influence of energy fields, plays a huge role. And as I also mentioned, I want to say it again, numerous studies have shown that confidence is more important than competence for success. That confidence is what initially engages what people will pay you for. Remember the Wharton and the Carnegie Mellon studies, we began this. Your why. In brief review, the most common difference between the best and everyone else is a compelling reason, commitment, the why. Meaning comes from contribution, something you believe in that makes a difference. You have to know what you're worth. I believe that when someone works with me in mentor coaching, it will make a significant difference for the rest of their lives. No strategy replaces integrity and caring. To make a difference by connecting with others, to be genuine. The most important difference between the best and everyone else, a compelling reason. Your why determines what you focus on and what you don't. The number one thing about the successful 1% of people, they are compelled by goals and dreams, having a why. People who struggle don't have a specific why, a compelling reason. 80% of success, we're told, and influence, is finding a big enough why. 20% is figuring out how. People have a need to feel a sense of belonging. Before people decide what they think of their message, they decide what they think of you. That decision is made in the first nanoseconds. The drive to affiliate is among our primary needs as humans. Of fundamental effectiveness is that connection, to be understood, to make a difference for the other person. Now, I love suspense and thriller films. I'm embarrassed to tell you how many times I've watched the Bourne trilogy. But when I watch any film or theater performance, I decide if I continue, if it's worth my time with this question. Is there a central character I connect with, maybe identify with, but primarily just like? If I don't like anybody, I'm gone. It's over early. Now, a final highlight, a final half dozen bullets about your story. Our brains are wired to want to be a member of a group. Think about what you provide with that, whether it's a group or an individual, your connection. We buy something when it activates the parts of our brains associated with our sense of self. We buy what is consistent with our identities. This is why you really have to know your client or your customer. A brand shares the same impact as we become confident in the predictability and trustworthiness of a brand. Every brand is a story, including history, expectations, promises, and emotions. Your brand is a story. Stories are more important than facts in changing someone's mind. Passion brands create passionate followers. And finally, your authenticity is crucial. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself, to care. We're back in discussion mode. If you'll manage the background noise, I'm interested in any thoughts or questions that you have, any follow-up or something you'd like to expand further, or just your take on this. Anyone, I'm interested in any thoughts you have or any clarifications about any of this. And think about, when I mention your brand as a story, think about the way that we follow a brand, the way you automatically trust a brand. Think about your favorite author. You know that when that favorite author, whatever book they write, it doesn't matter what the title is, you know you're going to buy that book because that author is a brand. You have a relationship with that person, and you're interested to see what they do next. And it doesn't matter if they go a little, can I get a management of the background noise, star six if you're going to shuffle paper or have background noise because it's picked up by your receiver. You will follow that author with whatever new that person comes out because that's a brand you trust. So think about your story as you're creating whatever offering you have, as you talk about what you do, because that's the kind of bond of connection, the trust and the warmth that is needed to create your story. We're going to look at a whole number of other things in the subsequent seminars and apply them in much more specific ways. And with examples and that sort of thing. But today was kind of an overview of some things that are maybe a little bit harder to get your arms around. So that's why I'm particularly wanting to know if there are any questions or clarifications about the thing.
Yeah, I think I have to chew on that for a little bit.
Yeah.
It makes great sense, following your presentation and the document, but in translating it at the same time as I'm listening and trying to get it to, what is my focus? What is the service, the offering, the care connection, and to get it that succinct, mine in particular is of an emotional support coping sort of nature. So it tends to make me talk too much because I feel like, I have all this to share and I really want you to, you and I to engage and have this, personal, really meaningful, moment. So to get all of that, down to the nanosecond when I first meet you and you're like, yeah, I'm kind of, I gotta kind of filter that down. And I'm not sure yet. I know it's there and it'll be powerful. I just, I have to.
I understand.
And
that could be something you think about, and it takes work to get it down to a very succinct communication. I'm going to describe in a subsequent seminar how important it is to get it down to 10 words or less. Someone
right.
I do some work with and have collaborated with, Mark Waldman at Loyola Marymount MBA in L.A. In fact, I was just at a retreat with him this last weekend. He's written a book that I'd highly recommend for coaches called Words Can Change Your Brain. What he's found is that what our brains can hold in a working memory is 10 words. After that, we begin to do a little bit of fading. And what he's done is to get people in highly charged situations like divorce, like mediation, situations that are charged. And when he's done some work and gotten them to participate in this mode that I'm about to describe, he will ask them, each side, whether it's an attorney or whoever's on the contentious sides, to put up both fists and to say, each time they say one word, to put up one finger, so that the 10-10 rule, they only get 10 words because they only have 10 fingers, then it's the other side. So whenever people work at getting very succinct and very specific, what he's found is that in these situations, they get a significantly higher satisfaction rate of resolution, and they do it in 20 to 30% of the time. So think about how important it is for you to do that with a client or in making a statement to someone. Think about the times you've been, say, at a presentation or listened to somebody, and once they get beyond 10 or 12 words, you may begin to fade a little bit. Or if you're reading a paper that gets a little bit too wordy and it's just too much to work at, what do? You vote with your feet. Or if you're in a presentation or in a conversation, you may begin to think about what you're going to have for dinner that night. In some way, it's very important. We're going to talk about much more specifics about that and how to communicate in those ways, and some very interesting things, I think, for us in developing conversational intelligence as coaches. So thank you all very much. I encourage you to not only address those questions if you like, but anything that you think of as you're sort of metabolizing all this. If there are any questions or thoughts or add-ons or clarifications that you have, send them to me in an email, and I'll begin right here next time. Thank you all for your participation and energy, and thank you all for those of you who have responded already, and I look forward to hearing from you and picking up right here next time. Thanks very, very much.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.